TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that, so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let TruGreen take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn, while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. Get started today by visiting TruGreen.com. Because we all love a beautiful lawn, but not all the work that it takes to maintain it. So, you do you. Let TruGreen do your lawn care. Visit TruGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed. You can trust TruGreen to give you the best lawn because they're the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Visit TruGreen.com today. That's TruGreen.com.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast, Monday edition, WGC Mexico Championship Week, just off of Riviera. I've got a special guest today. We're supposed to have two special guests, but one of them... technical difficulties. He was struggling. Mark Immelman had a tough time with his microphone this morning, but we do have Will Haskett, of the Perfect Number podcast, PGA Tour Radio. Will, you were at Riviera last week. How are you doing? Are you still high on what went down over the weekend?
Kyle, I'm high before I get there. And then when the actual tournament, provides the same amount of buzz, I need rehab really to get over the week because the course was so good. The field was so good and a major championship broke out on Sunday. So what more can you want? Right.
It kind of did. And I talked about this with Rick Gaiman on Sunday night is it felt U.S. Open-y. It really did. And I'm curious about you were there, there's a lot going on. When you think back on this event, and even today, like on Monday, what's the moment or two that you think back on of like, wow, that's where the tournament swung. That's the moment that I'll remember, when I think about this tournament.
Yeah. The fifth hole is obviously the most important part of that tournament and what happened with the decision making of Adam Scott and Rory McIlroy to have the course management mistake to miss that green long and then to compound the error by trying to get cute. And both of them tried to get it up and down for par at five it with two different methods of being able to do it. And then Adam Scott finally realizing, I'm just going to putt it up this slope and Rory then making a mess of it with the putter afterwards is that you're thinking this early in the round, we're already nosing ahead of the field. If we both make bogey here, it doesn't really matter. We're still going to be in control of being able to do it. And then I guess that's 1A. And then 1B is how they emotionally reacted to it after that. Like, yeah. Adam gets up on 6T after that and hits a great shot, puts himself above the hole, and then makes a putt, which he hadn't done all week. And Rory hits this wiper out to the right, just a easy late swing, leaves himself nothing. I mean, the fact he made four was probably the best score he was going to walk off of that green. And then it felt like it was 2 hours until you saw Rory get over being sucker punched by himself at that point of the golf course. And we talked about it a lot on the air. Mark Carnevale is my analyst this week on PGA Tour Radio. And we, for the whole week, we were just admiring, new Rory, new, I don't get rattled. I just walk around with this just great understanding and calmness to me. And then for 2 hours, it was like he was sulking, like he couldn't figure out what had just happened. And it leaked into his swing. Like his swing just was gone after that for a while.
Yeah, it certainly, he did have opportunities on, I think it was like 9, 10, 12, something like that, to make a bunch of birdies and kind of claw his way back into it. And he couldn't get anything going. And so I agree with you. I think five was it. I'm curious about, I think it was interesting because you see a lot of different people, talk about Riviera and they talk about how great it is. And I think sometimes they're talking about different things. I think some people are talking about the aesthetics. I think some people are talking about the architecture. What for you as you're kind of, at that place and seeing these guys play it, what for you makes Riviera great? Because I think there's a number of different angles that you could kind of come at that from.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and admit that I have any idea what's going on architecturally to make a golf course great or not. Like, put me on a Muni goat ranch and with a six pack of beer and we can go have just as much fun as if I'm playing Pebble Beach. But I think from covering the PGA Tour and covering the professionals, it's a golf course where there's no gimmicks. I mean, there's a couple of red staked penalty areas at Riviera, but there's no water. I mean, you don't need, you know, a Florida swamp or 7,500 yards with 8-inch rough to protect par on a golf course when we didn't have any rain for the whole week. You can get the Poe pretty bouncy and you have to play the angles game. And even though some of those holes were shortened because of how much runout there was, you could still be on the right side of the fairway, but it's the wrong side, if you know what I'm saying, for some of those holes that are going into it. And I think it's just knowing that that golf course can get tougher. And the fact that even though the weirdest thing about this is I always say that anybody can win on that golf course, even though the last few years have shown us that if you can really pipe the ball for some reason, you have an even, I think, larger advantage than some other places. And so maybe we'll look at it in 5 or 10 years and say, okay, Riviera has become more of a bomber's paradise. I mean, golf in and of itself has become more of a bomber's paradise. So let's not really try and dial this thing down a little bit. But I think it just has to do with the fact that it requires all these different types of shots. And it can have all different types of drama. You can see a hole out. You can see a chip in. It had more hole outs than any golf course in the PGA Tour last year because of the size of the greens. So you can have, out of nowhere, Joel Damon just going along making pars. No one's talking about him. And then he's the only person that can string together back-to-back birdies on the back nine. And he's all of a sudden really, really relevant and might even win the golf tournament. That's what I love about it because it's always so bunched. And there's just something, I mean, there's a mystique to it. It just feels different as a golf course because of everything that it has. It has a scoreable couple of holes. It has the drivable par four at 10. It has some really meaty par fours. It's just, it reeks of history without, I think a little bit without pretentiousness or overhype, to be honest with you. I don't think it's hyped enough. Is that crazy?
No, I think you're right. And I think it's, I think it is funny because I think, especially us in the media, we're like, oh, anybody can win here. Sung Kang played great. And then you look at the last five
Scott
winners.
Scott Brown.
Yeah, you look at the last five winners. It's Adam Scott, Bubba, EJ, and JB Holmes. And you're like, oh, well, can anybody win here? Because it doesn't seem like it. But I'm glad you brought up the architecture, like the part about being on the right side of the fairway, because one of the points that I used to kind of prove why Riviera is – and this goes back to the major championship thing, why it's great. You look at 13 on Sunday, par 4, playing like 475, and there was only like three or four birdies on the day, and all three of them came from guys that hit their drive up the right side. Now, it's not like a dogleg hole, but because of where the pin was back left on that hole, you had to have the right angle to be able to play a draw coming in. And if you didn't have that, you're gonna fly it long and left or wherever. And if you do that, you're dead. You're not making birdie from down and to the left beyond that hole. And I think there's so many holes like that with no water at all on this course that make it so fascinating. And I think we saw that. I mean, I couldn't get enough. Like I want them to play that course like five times a year.
Adam Scott and Rory McIlroy went 5 over on a par 4 without losing a golf ball.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, and people are like, oh, I don't want to see that. It's like, well, that's what makes golf super interesting. And I think that, you know, it was a U.S. Open without the absurdity of a U.S. Open, right? And so I think that part of U.S. Open, like championship level golf, is what people love without the just nonsense of protecting par or whatever else.
Yeah, well, you set it and forget the golf course, right? As soon as the weather forecast was what it was on Tuesday, the entire grounds crew was like, all right, well, we'll trim them the greens every day, and that's about it. We'll just let the golf course sit here, and they weren't in danger of losing the golf course. It got really firm and really fast. If you remember, you'd be complaining like hell when you came back into the clubhouse about how firm they let it get. But for those guys, the golf course is right in front of you, and it didn't blow at all week. I mean, there wasn't 2 miles an hour wind to speak of Thursday through Saturday. And then just somehow, some way, we got like 8 miles an hour yesterday into the player's face as they were coming on the back nine when you got to 12, 13, 14. And I was like, oh boy. Now these guys haven't even had to think about wind for 3.5 days. And now they just get maybe like a half club of wind while they're trying to play over bunkers to tight angles. And it was perfect.
So you are, what else is there besides, you've got Perfect Number Podcasts, you got PGA Tour Radio, where else is your voice, is your face these days?
I mean, golf has always been a love and a passion to me, but I've called 14 different sports in my life from a play-by-play standpoint. We don't have time in this podcast to name them all. Golf is a big part of it, but I actually came up covering the college game a lot. I think one of my bigger breaks was I was doing a lot of NCAA championships and the folks found out I had a golf background. And I started doing the NCAA championships. So before Golf Channel had, the championships when they got the men's, I want to say in 2014 was the first year Golf Channel had it. Cause I called Max Homa's national championship, which was the year that JT in Alabama won it the first time. So it would have been 13 was my last year doing the men's. So we're hoping to get more college golf out to things. So, you know, a little bit of a plug here right now is there's a group right now trying to bring more college golf to a streaming population this spring season. So I'll be out in Palm Springs this week on Wednesday for the final round of the Prestige. Great tournament field there. Texas is in the field with Cole Hammer. Pepperdine's in the field with Sahit Tegala. So, I mean, you've got some really good young amateur names that are there. And I think that if you look at the best amateur golfers that we've had over the last 15, 20 years, the top college players or two, they all matriculate and become really, 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 really good professionals too. And if you want to see high level golf, we'll go there. So yeah, there's college golf there. I got a basketball game on Sunday though, Kyle. So, you know, we'll get it all in.
I think Oklahoma State's in that prestige tournament as well. I think they won it last year when they had
finished second. That was the year that Matthew Wolf. So I covered it last year too. And Matt Wolf had won four starts in a row or three starts in a row. And then Hovland won individually, but
that's
the
right.
team ended up losing to LSU, who's kind of been like the giant killer. You think about all these big blue blood programs over the last couple of years, and then LSU comes out of nowhere and beats them in either big regular season events, wins the SEC, or in the case of a few years back, wins the whole thing. Wins
when you're doing an event like that, or even like a Riviera where you're out there walking around different storylines, how do you go into a week preparing for something like that? Because there's so many different things that can happen. What does your process look like for going into something like that?
So, I mean, for like a PGA Tour week, if I'm doing a PGA Tour radio event, this past week I got to host. Most of the time I'm on the ground calling golf shots. You know, you kind of know who the players are that you're going to be following at the beginning of the week. And I mean, you know, Kyle, I mean, we're just information junkies. You know, we just stay plucked as much as possible and you absorb as much as you can so you can remember this little anecdote. So when Max Homa plays his way into contention, you can sit there and tell all the fun stories about him coming to see the playoff between Tiger and Mayfair back in 1998 and all these sort of, you know, local tie-in type of stories. You can try and connect the audience a little bit to it. But a lot of it is just, is witnessing it and talking to people. Now, the professional game is so far different. I mean, I cannot wait to get out to California for a college event, because a high-end college event, you can literally walk up to the guy getting warmed up for his round on the range and sit there and stop him while he's hitting pitching wedges and talk to him about his game. You can't get away with that on the PGA Tour unless it's maybe Monday or Tuesday on the practice range. So I just love the access. I just love how at this stage in an amateur's career, how open they are to just talk about the fun of the game before – the handlers, the agents, the marketing reps all come in and you get these bubbles and insulated circles that really isolate even those of us. Look, I'm a total shill. I mean, my check comes from the PGA Tour when I work for PGA Tour Radio. Like, I'm not going to say anything negative about a guy on the air because I will get fired for doing so. And yet, like, no one wants to talk to you because they're just sort of programmed not to. So it's so refreshing to me to deal with college athletes because it's way more fun. It's way more laid back, and you can get so much more intel in that day leading up, or even the morning leading up to a big final round.
How does that bother you at all? Not being able to say anything negative? Because I think sometimes you see the great stories come from the drama of like good and bad, or, you know, all these different narratives in sports. How do you maintain that drama with only like trying to be positive throughout?
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, I think it's difficult for anybody. I mean, the fact that I work for an entity that's owned by the tour, it doesn't make it even that much different than your entity or any other entity that has a relationship with the tour to begin with. I think I'm going to look at this from a broader picture in terms of sports. I mean, as a student of sports broadcasting, something I've always wanted to do my entire life, we live in an era now where before, 30, 40 years ago, a generation before, the broadcast entity all the power. They had the money. They were the ones that were bringing the sports to the masses. They were the ones that were actually more profitable than the entities themselves. Now it's the teams, it's the organizations, it's the governing bodies. All of these are the ones that have the actual money and they have the power, and they're flexing it into every avenue of it. And, you know, it is. It's really challenging. It's really tough. It's like, how do you address some of the obvious things that are out there? And sometimes you just can't. And I'll fully admit that I have to grit my teeth and just kind of deal with it that way. But the hope is that you can, the hope is that the storyline is out there enough that you can somehow pivot back to what we're all hoping to talk about. And that is the golf itself. Like my hope is that the golf itself is what you're tuning in for. And hopefully it doesn't turn into a circus that you have to kind of dance around. I mean, that's not the easiest way for me to answer that question, but you can understand my hands are a little bit tied on it too.
Yeah, totally. This sounds like a jumping off point for like a 3-hour conversation about the Premier Golf League, but you want to move on to Mexico instead?
Is it real? I mean, I just did a podcast on it a couple of weeks ago. So Michael Bamberger's piece is the only one I've read that actually puts something out there that is tangibly better than maybe what the product is right now. All I just keep thinking of is, okay, what is going to be the World Golf Championships outcome of this negotiation ploy in the next couple of years? Like, what is the 2.0 of giving elite players a little bit more, but you know the status quo is going to stay, right?
I mean, that it certainly feels like leverage for the top 15 guys, and specifically around the WGCs, because those are the ones that can be, you know, those are the big tournaments that everybody plays in that can be affected the most. You can't change the major championships. PGA Tour didn't even run the major championships. And so, yeah, like that is the pressure point, it seems like. And throw in the players. I mean, they just announced what, a $14 million purse or $13 million or whatever it was.
Yeah, the first domino. Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's what it seems like, but I don't know. It's happened in other sports, you know, where it's flipped and gone to, kind of a different model. But I don't know. It's difficult to envision that. It's just it's such an extreme change in such a conservative sport that it just doesn't seem like it would happen.
The NFL swallowed up the XFL in 1 year, 20 years ago. We have the XFL 2.0 now. And what is it? It's NFL light. So I threw this out there, and I'll fully fall on this sword as my wacky idea to it all, but I could foresee or maybe even dream of a scenario where you have world governing bodies that sort of unite and come together. And so do we take the World Golf Championships? Do we take the FedEx Cup playoffs, the Race to Dubai, and a few others, and create an elite series to where you could effectively qualify either PGA Tour and kind of have your pick of all of the tournaments across? Like if you're an American and you want to go play the Turkish Open and the Irish and the Italian Open and whatever you'll have on the schedule over there, instead of playing the Byron Nelson and, in Wells Fargo, you sort of can. Or if you're a Frenchman and you're like, I've always wanted to go play over here, you kind of have a world-ish tour that has an elite level of events to it. I could maybe see it if you truly feel like you're going to get enough players at the top of the game who feel as if they aren't valued enough and want to break party lines with their buddies who are just outside that window, or they know could be back in that window the next year. That's the biggest one to me. It's like, how do you have, what's your eligibility? Like, do you get demoted? Is there relegation from the PGL? Like, what, where are we going here?
Oh, and what do you do when you're injured? You know, if you have to have a certain amount of guys, like, do guys get elevated mid-year? So for people who don't know, we're talking about the Premier Golf League, and it's been definitely a conversation, but essentially it's a 48 player league that's been thrown out there by some investors, some companies that want to invest and get into professional golf at the highest level. There's a team component to it. It's a season that would include, I've heard, anywhere from 10 to 18 events with a team aspect at the end of it. So somebody like Rory or DJ or Adam Scott, they would have a team that they play on. And so you kind of add up those scores throughout the year, but you're also contending as an individual. And the through line, the thing that holds it all together, would be that there's a lot more money in it. And I think that's obviously compelling for guys like Rory and DJ and Adam Scott and Tiger and whoever. And you're like, well, how could they come in with more money than like the PGA Tour would generate? And that's the question. Like, I don't know how all of this works together. And I don't know. I think that, you know, Rory said this at Torrey Pines. He said, look, these guys have been talking to us
for a while,
for like 5 years, 6 years about doing this. And basically, we'll see how it goes. Now, that talk, I think, has heated up a lot more over the last 3 months or whatever. But I don't envision that going anywhere in the near future. Although I've heard some things behind the scenes that you're like, well, maybe it will. I don't know. I think I talked to Jeff Shackford about this. Obviously, the only domino that matters is Tiger. Correct. And whoever has Tiger has all the power, all the leverage, everything that you would need. So I don't know. I don't know where we go from here, really.
You know, here's a perfect to encapsulate the issue with what's going on. There's a lot of buzz about it the last couple of weeks. And then what do we lead this podcast with? How good this past week was.
I know.
It's a great tournament with history. It's a tournament with a big purse that everybody wants to play in and whose name is on it? Tiger Woods. So is Tiger going to take that tournament to an upstart organization somewhere? Because that has to be the change. Is Tiger going to pack up his bags when he sees the impact that it's having on his foundation, the fact that they've made it an invitational, all of the amazing things that came from it? You'll have my attention if all of a sudden the next report that Shaq is breaking somewhere says, you know, the people at the TGR Foundation and Riviera are in talks to join the PGL. And then you'll have my attention when that sort of starts to happen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's the one thing that you can't generate as a new league is history. And it matters that the LA Open has been around for forever. It matters that Riviera is 100 years old. Like that stuff is meaningful to a lot of people, not just fans, not just media, but to a lot of different people that matter. And you can't create that unless you are somehow purchasing it, whatever that means, or bringing it along. You're bringing along the memorial. You're bringing along the Arnold Palmer Invitational, because that's just been around for, you're bringing along Colonial, which has been around for forever. Because otherwise you're just going to have a bunch of Oman Opens for like 20 mil. And it's like, I don't know. Do I care about that? I guess maybe I will if like Rory and Tiger are playing, but not really.
How many players care about it? How many American players or Americanized players? And by that, I mean the Rorys of the world who have a life here and enjoy their life here. Also, I mean, Rory understands the reality of where he wants to be and where his brand needs to go to be an ambassador for the game beyond here. But, you know, he's an Americanized type golf superstar. And how many actual American superstars are like, hey, you know what? I'm making 5-6 million a year plus endorsements here. I might be able to get a 20% pay raise, but I got to get on a plane and go halfway around the world 15 times a year to be able to make that happen. And once they have kids and everything. Okay. I mean, again, I'm a cynic by nature, Kyle. So but again, early on, like there was just not a whole lot of teeth there, and maybe we'll get a lot of teeth later. And if there are a lot of teeth later, then we'll completely revisit the conversation. But coming off of the week that we just had, look, I'm on golf Twitter with everybody else, and I understand we can poke holes through a lot of things, and we can nitpicks all over the place about what's wrong with the game and how it's being covered and how boring it might be at times. But this past weekend, there wasn't a whole lot that was broke that needs to get fixed, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the bottom line is for those guys, for the Rorys and Tigers and John Rahms of the world, is there has to be some mechanism in place where they get paid no matter what happens. Some revenue sharing model, right, where the stars and superstars are making money, whether they go out and finish T5 at Riviera or not. Because they're being, you know, the PGA Tour and these organizations are making money on them, and in every other sport, you get paid. You're LeBron, you get paid. No matter if you go out and put up, zeros across the board for 10 straight games, you're getting paid. That's not
happening. You pay for load management. You want to sit down and, yeah, you're getting paid.
Exactly. And in golf, that doesn't happen. And I don't know how that will happen, but I imagine that is sort of the outcome of all of this as we move into the future.
I've heard more veteran players that are for the idea of paying everybody in the field than I actually thought that I would hear. I figured the old guard would say, no, like, you got to make the cut to get paid. I've heard more guys, especially guys who played back in the day when it really didn't pay that well, even when you did make the cut, to be like, man, my life would have been so much easier if I knew that just maybe my expenses were covered. Now, I understand that doesn't matter to a big-time player, but I could see some of the trickle down with all the money that's flowing in, new TV deals and all these other sorts of things, finding a way to give the players a little bit more than just simply appearance fees for the big guys, that you actually have the ability to pay all 144, 156 guys on a week-in, week-out basis.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, my kids just walked into my content-making shed out here. They probably have some PGL takes as well. Let's talk Mexico, Will. Are you going?
No.
Okay. So neither of us are going. We're going to watch on TV. What's the number one storyline going into this week? Because I think you've got, obviously you've got Tiger skipping. You got a lot of guys skipping.
Yeah,
Brooks Koepka, Patrick Cantlay, Ricky Fowler. I think Henrik Stenson was in there. There's a lot of guys that are not playing this week. What is the preeminent storyline going into the first WGC of second of the season, but the first of 2020?
I think it now has to be Rory because of what happened on Sunday. You know, he's number one in the world again. He played like a number one in the world until he got to the fifth hole on Sunday. And so now here he goes to another tournament with a big field, and he doesn't have to worry about the shadow of it being Tiger's event and all the other tension that's going on there. I know we're not going to see angry Rory because Rory has removed angry Rory from himself to become a wonderful human being. He's a great person, and to achieve what he's done and then realize at 30 that he needs to prioritize better things in his life, I fully commend him for it. But at some point in time, there needs to be that sort of gut check moment for Rory, and maybe it's going to come at Augusta, but the last time most people saw Rory McIlroy play golf, he was sort of whimpering away from Adam Scott yesterday. So does he show up on a golf course that he knows he can overpower, that he was in the mix last year in, that he's got the odds on favorite? I mean, if you're a DFS player, he's $500 more expensive than DJ. I mean, he's ridiculously this week in terms of his odds and everything too. So like, is he going to show up like the alpha when Brooks isn't there and Tiger isn't there and swing it around like he's the alpha?
Yeah, I agree. Did you see what he said, by the way, about – I don't know if you read the Irish Independent interviews with him and Paul Kemmage. Did you see what he said about rooting for Tiger at last year's Masters? Did you happen to see that?
Yeah.
I thought that was so interesting because he was talking about how when he first saw that Tiger was in the lead, he gets back to his house or hotel or whatever, and he was like, I don't know if I want to root for this, because he knew that all the attention, all the questions for the next however many months – would only be about that.
Sure.
And I thought that was such an honest, cause like, if you and I are being honest, it's like, man, I'd kind of love to talk about Adam Scott, like in lieu of talking about Tiger 24/7.
Right.
And I thought that was a really interesting thing. And I'm glad you brought it up, because that is going to be the case in Mexico this week. We're not going to be on Tiger stiff back watch. We're not going to be on, you know, is he, you know, what's wrong with the wedge game from 140 in, you know, whatever. Like, there's none of that. We just get to focus on these other guys who are the best in the world right now.
You're the number one player in the world. You went triple bogey when you had the lead of a golf tournament on Sunday after you became the number one player in the world. You're on a golf course that if you play the way that you should, you eliminate 95% of the competition. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, you throw it's a good field. But if Rory plays to Rory's level, there's what, maybe 8-9 guys that could actually challenge him in the field through the course of the week. So I think it's fair. And again, like, I love who Rory is. I love how open Rory is. I love how kind Rory is. I love everything about Rory McIlroy, but I am fascinated with this idea of the alpha gene. And when you look at players, and we've talked so much about Kobe Bryant the last few weeks, and everybody talks about Mamba mentality, and it's like Kobe or Michael Jordan or some of these guys, like the fact of the matter is those guys were really difficult to get along with as professionals, as teammates, as people, because their drive to win, their killer instinct was so strong that it really alienated them from other people. And then you have someone like Rory who has this gravitational pull to him from his peers and from us and from everybody, but what does that mean for his edge? So at what point in time does Rory challenge that edge? When he says to the media this week, Kyle, that he doesn't set goals of winning specific tournaments, and I know people that have backed him up for that because of, you know, luck can get involved and all these other things. All he wants to do is focus on playing really good golf, and it'll sort of settle itself down. It's like, okay, I get that. I think that's okay outside of the two or three tournaments that you really know you need to win, Rory. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I think the flip side of that argument is like, look at the players last year. You know, like he faces some adversity. I think he made a double early on and he comes back and he does it. Like he closes it down the stretch. And so I think it's there. We don't always see it because sometimes it doesn't play out like that. But it certainly is a different, he's a different person than he was when he was 23, 24, 25, you know, four major Rory, first ascended to number one in the world. He's just a different human being. And so.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I think he's smarter about the way that he plays and he doesn't, I don't know. It seems like he doesn't have to exert himself as much to get the same amount out of himself as he does, as, you know, as he used to. Maybe that's not true. Maybe that's just all nonsense, but, yeah, I think he's wiser and better at managing himself in these courses. And I think one thing that's interesting, you talk about Riviera and I mean, obviously it's obvious why Adam Scott and Rory would play great at Riviera. They're the best ball strikers. You go to Mexico. It's like the complete opposite of Riviera.
Oh yeah.
And so who, like, does that translate there? It has for Rory over the past few years and, it has for DJ over the past few years. It seems to not matter where those guys play, where John Rahm plays. John Rahm wins all over the world. Is that a storyline to you going from Riviera down to Chapultepec and the WGC Mexico?
Still Poe Greens, I'm pretty sure. So there's a little bit of familiarity. Yeah. So maybe a little familiarity there, but no, I mean, here's the thing. We're going to go back to what we said before. Like, you get called a hypocrite when you say you can't overpower Riviera because of who has won there. But the fact of the matter is when you put a really strong field in there, the guys who hit it long and are really good ball strikers are going to win no matter where you really play. If DJ, yeah, Adam Scott and everybody showed up every year and played Harbor Town, sure, you know, Matt Kuchar might still be in contention and putt out of his mind like he did this past week. But we just know that if you can hit it pretty far, it doesn't really matter what golf course, you'll figure out a strategy to be able to get around a little better than everybody else. Yeah, I think you've got enough guys that are good, great, great, phenomenal all around players where you would expect this week there to be some weekend drama with a couple of high names rising because we, unlike Riviera, Kyle, we've seen with this tournament, two or three superstar players can just separate and run away.
Yeah.
And that is probably something that you'd look forward to more here because we knew Friday, Saturday, even Sunday morning, that no one was going to win by seven shots at Riviera. Yeah. That we were going to have that weird, crazy seesaw back and forth back nine like we had. We don't necessarily know that in Mexico City. You could have a difference of 40 shots between first and last.
I'm pretty sure if you played Harbor Town every week that Luke Donald would be the number one player in the world right now.
They probably would be, but when has DJ ever played that tournament?
Yeah, no, that's true. Has he played it? I thought he did play it one time.
This is where I need to have stuff in front of me. I could probably find that out pretty quickly, but I mean, think about that and it's like, okay, yeah, I understand that you can't overpower that golf course. It's a perfect design against the distant sort of gains and everything, but I don't know, like if Rory really wanted to focus on it, would, you know, like how much better would he be than Luke Donald? I'm looking it up. Hold on. We're going to get to the bottom of this.
Our producer, Jacob, said he, and I was just reminded of this, he does play it because he's an RBC guy. So he's played it, I think, the last few years. But, okay, what other storylines in terms of going from Riviera to Mexico? It's two really good weeks in a row in terms of fields. Who are the other guys or what are the other storylines that you're looking forward to this week?
Well, I mean, I think there were so many guys in the field at Riviera. Oh, by the way, I got the DJ. He's played it four times, including the last 2 years, T16, T28 for Dustin Johnson at Harbor Town. Okay. You know, I think you've got some guys that we didn't even see last week. I mean, Webb Simpson took last week off.
Yeah.
And I think he's probably the most underappreciated guy over the last 10 months. And it was gratifying and validating for him to win the way that he did in Phoenix because he was doing things that most players do that would lead to 2-3 wins in a stretch of golf. And so he got the win. He's the only guy in the top 10 in the world that doesn't play this past week. So I'm kind of curious to see what a week off of watching and a couple of weeks off of basking in the glow of that win, if Webb still shows up and is right there, you know, T4, T5. to be honest with you, if I was betting this week on who was going to win, I love Tommy Fleetwood this week. We didn't see Tommy last week, playing really good golf consistently through the end of last year, has, you know, some good runs here. You want to talk about, you know, a great ball striker, sneaky long, can kind of do some things. So a couple of those guys are getting introduced back into it, because right now we're in that sort of run up to the Players and then to Augusta, where we're just going to see all of these guys week in and week out. So I want to know, going to Sawgrass, you know, who are the six hottest players in the world right now? Because I really feel like we've been served up so many guys that are playing at an elite level right now. And so now I want to separate the contenders from the pretenders. You know, like, is this Justin Thomas play well, miscut? Like, what's going on with JT's game? Is this a settle down week for him, or are we in some sort of trend of inconsistency? Like, what's going on with all these guys who we expect to be contenders when we start hitting these big tournaments?
Yeah, for sure. By the way, the leaderboard from last year's Mexico Championship, the top 10. So DJ was at 21 under, Rory's at 16 under, Ian Poulter, Paul Casey, and the Barn Rat at 11 under. So DJ beat them by 10.
Yep.
And then you got Sergio Cantlay, Cam Smith at 10 under. You got JT at 9 under. And then you got Tiger, Juice Luton, Keegan Bradley, and David Lipsky at 8 under.
All the lips.
That's an unbelievable leaderboard.
That is. That is. And I mean, I don't really remember watching much of it, because it just felt like, didn't Rory drive it behind a tree early or something, and then it was over?
He tried to get a drop from
oh,
like,
that's right.
Like a car, there was like, he looked like Albert Pujols, like trying to set up for his shot so that he could get relief. And then finally it was like, yeah, you're not getting relief here.
No. That's so funny. That's the only thing I remember from last year, is Rory behind a tree trying to get a drop, and it didn't matter because DJ was going to lap the field. That's all I remember. And like, where's, like, DJ all of a sudden is a non-factor this past weekend, and then you blink and you're like, oh my gosh, he's going to win this golf tournament on Sunday afternoon, and then tugs two pretty easy shots at 12 and 13 left that really cost him a chance to be relevant in that tournament. But aren't we just kind of lurking on the edge of that Dustin Johnson five shot win? He continues the win streak year in, year out. I mean, he can't sustain a level of play like he was when he was number one player in the world. I mean, he's getting up there, but at the same point in time, you just expect there to be a week where he's just going to run out and win a really big golf tournament by four or five shots. And we run the stat up there about how many years in a row Dustin Johnson has won. and then we just rinse, repeat, and recycle for next year.
Yeah, no, I agree. I like the Tommy Fleetwood call too. He's finished, I think this is the fourth year that it's been in Mexico. So 17, 18, 19. He finished top 20 all 3 years. He was second back in 2017. He lost to DJ by a stroke, in the first time it was played in Mexico. So, it should be fun. Another guy that, you know, we talk about on here a lot, and that I have kind of been keeping an eye on, especially the last couple of weeks, Pebble and Riviera, is Jordan Spieth. And, you know, so much promise at Pebble, closes out there really well, finishes top 10. You're like, okay, here we go. And then he was just not good at Riviera. I mean, 66th in approach shots. His iron play remains all over the place. What are your expectations for him for the rest of the year?
Well, the one thing that I thought we found a little bit late last year was that the putter was behaving itself. And now that we've got ShotLink to begin 2020, I mean, he's lost strokes on the green in 3 out of 4 starts so far this year. I mean, outside of, you know, a good week at Pebble. Even when Jordan was the number one player in the world, and we probably were overlooking some of the issues in the long game portion of it, he was a generational short game talent. So he has to be one of those guys that's going to gain, you know, close to a shot around, maybe probably a shot and a half when it comes to putting it around the green. Like, it just has to be for Jordan Spieth to be relevant, because he just doesn't have the ball striking consistency to be there. I mean, when you look back at those magical seasons of Jordan Spieth, you know, in 2015, he was gaining 1.1 shots putting and around the green, which was about what he was gaining in approach and off the tee on average in 2015. So if you think about that, half of his gains were coming around the greens, whereas most of these guys that are tops in the world right now, the Rorys of the world, really outside of last year, are gaining 2/3, 3/4 of their strokes gained from tee to green.
Yeah.
And so until Jordan comes back to being the best short game player in his generation, that's going to be sort of hard. And he had a couple of short misses. I mean, watching him and Tiger, oh my Lord. I mean, it was painful to just sort of see them not scared of the hole when you know they have to jam those little four footers and they're just hitting complete shutdown pulls. It's still kind of hard. So it's a work in progress. I admire the grit. I admire the fire. You know, he's one of the most competitive guys that's out there, but I think we're still in a holding pattern for sure with him.
Some of those Tiger putts were just astonishing. I could not believe what I was watching. Did you walk with him at all when he
No,
was...
No. So, I mean, I'm behind a bank of monitors, you know, from the hosting duty standpoint. So, Dennis Paulson was out with him with our coverage when he picked him up. And the one thing that Mark Carnevale, our analyst, that this past week and I kept looking at is, you know, if he three putted a green, it wasn't the five footer that he missed. It was the fact that when the ball went by the hole the first time, it was 18 inches offline, 24 inches offline. I mean, that was the stuff to me that was, is he looking at the line? Is it a really bad misread? Are we mechanically, you know, what's going on here? I started the week with that first round going, man, he looks really sharp. We know how good he's been tee to green. The last 3 or 4 months, like since the surgery, he looked fit. He looked trim. I was like, this is probably where Tiger needs to be in his physical transformation as he gets into his mid to late 40s. And then all of a sudden at the end of the weekend, he's tired. He has no distance control. He can't hit a putt. And he's telling Henny that he has to gain more weight and get back into the gym more. And I'm like, whoa, what happened? What happened in 72 hours?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Okay. We are going to give our early one and done picks. We're not going to hold you to it. You can switch it later in the week if you want. I took a big lead in our CBS one and done league over the weekend because I had Adam Scott, our first winner of the year. Mm-hmm. So I want to know who you're leaning toward as we head into the WGC Mexico Championship. But first, let's hear a word from our sponsors.
Did you know that more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Those numbers do not add up to me, and I know it can be confusing, the biomechanics of the foot, the bones, the muscles, everything in between, but solving foot pain is simple, and that's where Superfeet comes into play. These Superfeet insoles go into your shoes, give your feet comfort and support where they need it the most, and redistribute the forces that reduce both stress and strain through your entire body, not just your feet. Insoles have been phenomenal for me personally, and they are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. I can attest to that myself, especially when walking a lot of golf holes that I play. So if you feel good, you play good, you look good, everything works out from there, and it starts from the bottom up. Visit superfeet.com and enter promo code FIRST at checkout for 15% off your first order, plus free shipping.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Okay, Will, let's wrap this up. What you gave me Tommy Fleetwood earlier, somebody to watch. Is that the direction that you would lean for one and done, or what are you thinking here for Mexico?
Yeah, I would probably lean that direction just because if I'm looking at a one and done for the year, I'm going to hold. There are plenty of other names that I'm holding in reserve for, you know, the major championships and other things that are coming up. I think Tommy is a pretty good play at the Players. He's a pretty good play probably at the PGA this year at Harding. I mean, I think there are some places where I would like Tommy Fleetwood's game, but yeah, I already mentioned him, so I would just go ahead. I'd float it out there. Although, you know what? I wouldn't mind a DJ burn this week, to be honest, because you just don't know like where the knee and everything the rest of the year, given his history on this course, I could make a play to be like, you know what? if I'm holding Brooks for a U.S. Open and Rory for here and maybe even Tiger if he shows me something later on, then I could almost see a DJ burn early. But I would, yeah, my guy would be Tommy Fleetwood.
I like the DJ call. I honestly can't believe I'm about to say this. I might go Rory here because I don't know. You know, you think about using somebody like that, obviously at a major championship or at a Players where he won last year, but which major? Like he didn't, I guess PGA, I guess Harding Park, obviously he's had success there, but it just feels like the way you said it feels like a DJ five stroke win. I could see the same from Rory this week in Mexico.
I could see the same thing too. And I mean, if you have a gut about someone that's going to win, what's the harm in doing it? Because I mean, I'm already looking at the list and I'm like, well, I can almost promise you that I'm going to waste Adam Scott in 2020. You know, it's like, I'm going to get to the end of the year. Like, how did I not play Adam Scott? Like, I mean, he won early and then all of a sudden you're into the FedEx Cup playoffs and you still have like John Rahm sitting around and somebody else sitting around and you get the tour championship and you're like, dang, I still have Paul Casey and Paul Casey always finishes top five here. And I'm like, and you know what? There goes Adam Scott. Man, I didn't use him for the whole year and he wins like five times or something like that. Like player of the year, I never use him.
Yeah. No, I could totally see that happening. Okay. Well, we will give our official one and done picks later in the week. But keep it on CBSSports.com all week for WGC Mexico Championship coverage. Will, I appreciate your time. It was fun to chat, as always. And you can check out Will Haskett at Will Haskett, Perfect Number Podcast, PGA Tour Radio, headed out to the Prestige in California to cover some college golf later this week. Will, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Kyle. I hope Mark unfreezes at some point in time.
Mark's got some technical difficulties to figure out. In the meantime, everybody who's listening can go subscribe anywhere where podcasts are found. Be sure to rate and review us. That's very helpful. My producers and bosses enjoy that. So go and do that, and we will be back later on in the week.
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.